Welcome to Thrive, Mental Health and the Art of Living Free. I'm your host, Melissa Clark, a professional counselor in the Dallas area with a passion for helping you overcome challenges, process painful emotions, and understand your God-given identity. Thank you so much for being here. I believe listening to this podcast will leave you feeling excited, educated, and empowered. As y'all know, we are in the middle of a year-long series. We're almost halfway done with the year, which is like so insane to me of how fast the year is going. But here we are, halfway into 2022, and we are still working on being healthy. I don't know about you, but this for me is a daily pursuit to take care of myself well. It is such a challenge because we are so complicated. We have so many areas of our life. Life is so busy. It is a struggle and a challenge to take care of ourselves well. So I just wanted to be transparent with you and let you guys know that I hope that this is helping you, but it is really helping me learn about all the different areas of ourselves, ways to take care of ourselves from different perspectives, different voices. And so personally, it has really resonated. I loved today's conversation with Karis Snyder. We talked all about anxiety with our kids. Now, if you're not a parent, I still feel like this is a great episode to listen to because what she has to say translates to just loving yourself well, loving your inner child, helping out those kids who hopefully are a part of your life in one way or another. A little bit about Karis. She is a speaker, she's a writer, she's an author, and she loves sharing a message of hope. She herself has struggled and overcome times of anxiety and depression that for her began as a child, just like a lot of us. She desires to help all generations see their worth and value. And so it's so important that she helps give a voice to the voiceless and help those who feel alone in their battle. Honestly, I felt like I was just meeting a friend that I had known for years. It just had been a while since we had caught up. She was just like that similar. And so I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Karis. I want to welcome to the show, Karis Snyder. Karis, welcome.
Thank you for having me today.
I am super excited. It sounds funny. I always like preface this, but I love to talk about anxiety. I personally struggle with anxiety. It's been a huge part of my life, a huge part of my practice. And so I feel like we are definitely kindred spirits in this like lane of talking about something that people often don't like talking about.
You're right. I mean, adults and kids, teenagers, we feel like we have to hide it. We don't want to talk about it. So anything that we can do to shine a light on it and make it normal to talk about, I'm with you. I think it's so important.
You have a new book out, Anxiety Elephants for Tween Girls, and another book, Anxiety Elephant for Tween Boys. Tell us the heart behind these books.
Absolutely. So a couple of years ago, I actually released a version for adults, Anxiety
Elephant. Cool.
It's a 31-day devotional. I self-published it. It actually came out December 2019.
Oh. And then how fitting.
Right. In His Sovereignty, 2020 happened. And I was speaking in the schools. I was sharing, you know, talking about practical coping skills. I was in churches sharing my own story of how anxiety and depression 10 years ago almost took my life. And when I was in the schools, my kids, I went to their school talking and they had a copy of the adult version. And they said, "Hey, Mom, will you write a version with words we can understand?" That really stopped me in my tracks. And God began to just kind of do a work in me and bring back to my memory some things that I dealt with as a kid, you know, that really kind of paved the way for those negative responses to anxiety, those pushing of the things down. And so He began to just show me, let's use all this for good. And if we can equip our tweens now with how to respond to anxiety when it comes, because we know it's going to come, those anxious feelings, those anxious thoughts, it's going to come. But if they can learn some ways to begin to practice, where will they be as adults, you know, and if we can help them and if we can train them up as God commands us to do as parents, you know, as adults in their life, then let's do that. Now, it's not easy. That doesn't mean they're going to, you know, freely talk about it. But if we can plant the seeds, then let's do that. And so it really kind of was a seed planted by my own daughters to just asking, can you write this? And then, you know, I personally, Melissa, after I wrote this whole book, I thought, okay, I'm all done with writing. Let me move on to something else. And God was like, no, not yet. These resources are needed. And I'm sure you've seen it over the last couple of years. I mean, anxiety is just
skyrocketing,
how it's affecting our kids and, you know, adults. I mean, all ages.
Yeah. What's exciting about books like yours is it helps to shape new pathways for our kids. And the brain is super pliable at that age and things are not developed yet. And so you're building pathways that once created won't be uncreated. And so not to say that they won't continue to struggle, but I think having those pathways formed really early makes a huge difference in the development of our kids.
I love that. And I've really just tried to learn about the brain, to learn about how you can retrain it, how you can make those pathways, you know, how important it is to tell our brain when we need to be the boss, when we need to say, no, this is not a real threat. I'm safe. I'm okay. To know that we can do that. I think that that was a liberating thing for me to learn. Mm-hmm. Just because a thought came in, it didn't mean that it was true.
Yeah.
It didn't mean that it was real. And so I really just tried to understand just the power of the brain, how it is trying to protect us and how I can kind of come in there and take thoughts captive and I can retrain it. Like you're talking about, make those new pathways and as many voices as we can get to help kids see that, to see that they can make those pathways. I feel like that can just really be helpful for them in their growth and their development.
Yeah. I think sometimes when we hear words like anxiety and depression, it can be really scary for parents. Even myself, like I don't want to like label my child. And even though it's not necessarily a label, but empowering to get help and coping skills. And I'm also thinking about how anxiety is often hereditary. And so admitting that for our kids can often mean admitting it for ourselves. I'm curious if you've seen pushback from parents of even helping their kids to do devotionals like this or to embrace coping skills because they're afraid of looking at it.
That's a really great question. I have had some parents say to me, I'm glad you're helping those kids.
Them.
I've had some say to me, well, if we talk about it, won't this put that idea in their head?
Exactly.
I've heard that one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's probably already in their head, first of all. So let's go ahead and just help them acknowledge it and deal with it. But I've had a lot of parents say, thank you, because they have said, you know, we didn't know how to have the conversation, you know, anytime it might come up or they may see their sons or their daughters dealing with anxiety. Oftentimes their words may go to dismissing it, you know, like, oh, it's not a big deal. Oh, it's going
to,
you know,
what do they have to worry about?
Right. Or, oh, this won't matter in 10 years, mm-hmm. you know, and they think that it's helping, you know, I've even said those things, but we don't realize that it's dismissing.
Yes.
Causing them to question and second guess. So I've really had more of thank yous. Thank you for starting the conversation. Thank you for giving us words, for giving us permission to just sit and listen, to not have to fix it, to just listen and just be there in their life. You know, that feels uncomfortable sometimes as a parent because we want to fix it all. We want to make it all better, you know, and then move this little magic wand, and we can't do that. And when we can come to terms with that as parents, then we can really get down in the trenches with our tweens, our teens. And, you know, sometimes I may find myself in my bathroom crying because it breaks my heart, but to know that I can walk through it with them and see them get to the other side eventually, I think that speaks volumes to mm-hmm. our kids.
No, and I can even just see the emotion as you're talking about it. It's so painful. It's called snowplow parenting. Whenever we want to remove every challenge from our kids' pathway, I am guilty of that. Like I definitely want to remove every challenge to make it easier. But if I'm honest, the person I'm making it easier for is myself. Because kids have to struggle. They need to build resiliency. They need to build those skills, that grit, that tenacity, that confidence that they can figure it out. And so one thing that we've really started doing is empowering our kids by saying, well, what do you think about that? What can you do? And kind of putting the burden back on them. That's what I'm hearing you say, is not fixing it for them, but rather sitting in it with them.
That's right. You know, and I've watched my daughters, you know, when they'll come to me and tell me something is hard, and I will respond back and say, you're right, it is hard. They'll kind of look at me and say, oh yeah, this is hard, you know, and just kind of help them see they're not doing anything wrong. It's just hard. And we can't remove the pressure. I tell teenagers that when I talk to them, the pressure is going to be there. And when you're an adult, we're not preparing you to become an adult if we try to hide the pressure or take it away. But if we can teach you how to acknowledge it, how to approach it, not to avoid it, you're really just building that muscle to just know how to go and live life an abundant way, you know, and how it's not going to get the best of you. You know, as a teen, as an adult, anxiety paralyzed me.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived in complete fear and dread, and that moved me personally into depression.
Because
I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know what to do. And I thought I was doing so many things wrong when I just needed to know that what I was going through really was hard.
Tell us a little bit more about your story. You alluded a moment ago that it almost ended your life. Do you feel comfortable sharing your journey with anxiety and depression?
Absolutely. About 10 years ago, 2011, so I guess it was 11 years ago, everything appeared great, appeared perfect on the outside. My husband and I, we were leading worship at a church. I had a successful business running out of my home. My daughter, who's 13 now, holy cow, she was 2 at the time, living her best toddler life. But I was being crushed on the inside by these feelings that I was having. My heart would be racing. I couldn't get my breath. Sleeping at night almost felt like a long lost friend because my thoughts were just constantly moving to the what ifs. What if this happens? What if that happens? And it was worst case scenario type thinking. And I told no one. I was a master of the mask because I had also found myself in this place of denying anxiety and depression were real. And I was one of those church leaders who, if you came to me talking about it, my response to you would be something like, you need to pray harder. You need to try harder. You just need to trust God more. And if I knew you really well, my response to you would be, well, you need to suck it up, buttercup, and move on. Now that's brutal. Mm-hmm. And that is not the compassion of Christ. And so then I began to experience these things and I was afraid, honestly, I was afraid to tell people because I was afraid that they were going to respond to me
the same way that you had to them.
Yes. And I realized, wait a minute, this is very real. This is very hard. And I am praying harder. I am trusting God, but I cannot get through this. And so I remember a couple months into this, I had one of the worst anxiety attacks I had ever experienced. I was sitting on my couch. I remember it was a beige couch. My daughter was in her playroom playing. And I thought that she was going to come in that room at any moment and find me dead on the floor.
Oh my gosh. Because
my heart was just racing out of my chest and I thought I was having a heart attack.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, my mom was a safe place. She was a safe person that I could talk to. I called her and she told me, Sakaris, you need to go to your doctor right now. I think you're having an anxiety attack, but you need to go to your doctor. And I knew even then, I was almost 30 years old, not to argue with my mother, to just
do what mama says.
Right. And so I remember calling my husband. He had not seen me that way. And I was just full of shame. I was full of so much shame. And the nurses hooked me up to the EKG machine. I just kept telling them, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're having to deal with me today. I'm sorry that I'm a burden. My daughter was sitting in the chair crying because she saw her mommy, you know, hooked up to this machine. She had no idea what was going on. And I looked at her and I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that mommy's failing you. And then my husband came in and I said, I'm sorry you're having to leave work. You know, I just felt like this bother, this burden. And he took my daughter. I said, I'll call you later. And the doctor came in. He said, your heart is fine. You're having an anxiety attack. And at that moment, I still didn't want to admit what I was dealing with. And I looked at that doctor and said, I think you're wrong. I mean, who does that? Who tells a doctor that they're wrong? But when you're
well, and he's probably used to it. Like, I doubt very many people in that situation are like, you're right.
Yeah.
I knew it.
I know. Yeah. I was still in denial. So then I moved to a place of just dread and depression. You know, look at you, you're worthless, you're hopeless, you're useless, you're a burden to your family. And I had been, for me, I was trying to numb the pain of anxiety instead of dealing with it. So I was starving myself. Mm. I wasn't eating. I was drinking multiple gallons of water a day. I was exercising, you know, 2 hours at least every day, just trying to numb that pain. And I had actually strained my chest cavity muscle wall. So then that doctor tells me, well, you can't lift your daughter. You can't lift a grocery bag for the next 6 months. So then there goes the purpose. You know, I had put my purpose into all these things I was doing. I ended up getting pregnant in the midst of all of this. And I might have weighed 100 pounds. I mean, I was just skin and bone. And I remember my doctor, she was so gentle with me. She could see the depression. She could
see. You're struggling.
Yeah. And she said, Karis, I don't care if you eat donuts for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Just eat for the sake of the baby. So in that moment, it was like that mama bear instinct kicked in. You know, I couldn't eat for myself, but I would eat for the baby. But also, if your doctor tells you you can eat donuts for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you eat the donuts for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I did. I ate a lot of donuts and I gained probably 6 pounds in 8 weeks. But I ended up having a miscarriage. I lost the baby. And that was rock bottom for me. And I just, the enemy came in with these thoughts of, look what you did. Look what you did to that life. Look what you're doing to the lives around you. They're better off without you. You're not needed on this world. God can't use you anymore. You failed everyone. And I really did think that everyone would be better off without me. And to find myself in that place, you know, to be this leader in a church, but to find myself at rock bottom and to think that I wasn't needed on the world at all, that scared me. It scared me, but I didn't know what to do. And it was like in that moment, I can remember, it just felt like God just reached down on his two gentle hands and said, look up, look up. And when I looked up, my doctor was there. A counselor was there to help me. My family and friends who I thought were going to reject me if they knew what I was really dealing with, they didn't. And in fact, many of them said, you know what? Me too. I'm struggling too. I'm dealing with the same things you are. And to know that I wasn't alone, that there were helpers there, and to know that others were dealing with the same struggle as me, because, you know, we think it's just us. We think that no one else is dealing with what we're dealing with. To know that I wasn't alone in that, and that there was hope, that I was filled with purpose, that God was not mad at me. He was not mad at me because I was dealing with anxiety and depression, and that didn't take away the purpose he had for my life. In fact, he was going to use it for good.
That's right.
He was going to take all of that and use it for good and waste absolutely none of it. That began my process of healing, restoration, you know, going to counseling. I needed medication to get my brain, those hormones back into balance.
Yes.
You know, and now I'll be honest with you. I cried for the first month of taking medication because I thought, you know, we do this. I thought I was doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I was messing up. And my doctor, you know, she said, if you had a broken bone, if you had diabetes, if you had heart disease,
that's right, you would take the medicine. No big deal.
That's what she said. She said, would you argue with me? And I was like, absolutely not. And she said, well, your brain needs some help.
Yeah.
Back into balance.
Yeah.
And after that first month, my daughter had a birthday party at a bouncy house, which would probably give anxiety to any adult. And so I remember she said, hey, mommy, will you go down the big slide with me? And previous to that, I never would have gone down that slide.
You couldn't have.
No. And I said, yes. And we got up to the top of the slide and everybody was taking pictures. So I was trying to move out of the way because I thought they were taking pictures of her. They said, no, we're taking pictures of you. We want you to remember this moment. And that was huge for me. So I knew that medication was clearing the fog. And it was helping me to live. It was helping me to live my life. And then that counseling really helped me get to that root of where the anxiety and the depression were coming from. And like you said, you had mentioned earlier how it can be hereditary. My aunts began to tell me how they struggled.
Yeah.
To be like, listen, why didn't you warn me? But it allowed them to have the freedom to talk about it. You know, for all those years, they had been hiding it and they had been, you know, not telling anyone. So those moments to see that shift, to see how all of those pieces came together, it was really a reminder of just how much God does love us,
yeah,
how he cares about us, how he places these helpers in our life, and that he's in the struggle with us. He was in that struggle with me. He never left me, not once. Not once did he leave me in that pit all alone, but he helped me to come out. Mm-hmm. And helped me to find that healing and restoration. But I had to begin to do my own, to do the work. I had to acknowledge, hey, this is very real. Anxiety and depression are very real. And I had to begin to do that work of facing it and learning how to respond to it differently. And that was a messy process. And people always ask me, Melissa, do you ever get anxious anymore? Do you ever get depressed anymore? Hoping that I will say, no, I'm good. I'm fine.
But sorry.
Yes, I still do, but I've learned some new ways.
You struggle differently.
That's right.
I want to say, I really appreciate you sharing and being so open. The more we can hear other people's stories, the more it can put words to what we're experiencing, because sometimes we don't really realize what we're going through until we hear somebody else say it. And then it's that little light bulb moment of like, me too. Yeah. So if you're struggling with that, those intrusive thoughts, I want to let you know, just right off the bat, anytime you hear that you voice, that's the voice of, I call it the accuser. Some people would call it Satan. I call it the voice of the accuser. And please know that God never, hey, use you. He calls us by name. We could do big, big studies in the Bible all about the importance of names. So he never uses shame. He never uses guilt. He never uses condemnation. So anytime you hear that, think about like an editor with a red pen and mark a line through it, because it is like not true. Can you add to that, Karis?
Well, I was sitting here thinking, I actually wrote about this in the Tween devotional one of the days. I discovered where Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah.
And he said, my soul is overwhelmed.
Yep.
To the point of sorrow and death. And it was like this light bulb moment of knowing, if Jesus can be honest about where he's at, and if he can go to the Father and be transparent and say, hey, Abba, if there's any way, you know, this cup can pass from me, yet not what I will, your will be done. So if he can be honest, if he can be transparent in prayer, and to see that God, like you said, God didn't shame him. God didn't point his finger at him. He strengthened him to walk through that moment. So if Jesus can do that, and we know Jesus knew no sin, then that is an open door for me to be fully transparent, fully honest, and to acknowledge what I'm walking through. So that for me was a big moment to kind of make that discovery after my healing and restoration. I had probably read that story a million times
sure.
in church, but it hit different.
Mm-hmm.
It hit me different. And I was just like, this is huge. Jesus was totally honest. He wasn't like, hey, # blessed, # savior of the world. I got
toxic positivity.
He was like, dude, this is hard. This is hard. But he didn't avoid the hard. He walked through it. He acknowledged it was hard and he kept going. And so that was a really big moment for me to realize that.
I love that. Moving into talking about kids and then devotional book and just your work with kids, how do you feel like anxiety uniquely affects the tween age group?
Yeah. So, you know, tweens are considered anywhere from 8 to 12 to 9 to 12 year olds. And I think over these last couple of years, it's really just affected them. First of all, that social anxiety part, they don't know how to be social with each other because they're connected to screens. It's easy for them to get very nervous about having to be in those social places because they haven't been taught. They've grown up with screens. They've grown up with how to kind of be someone behind a screen, but not really themselves. So that's an added, you know, anxiety there. I've also seen with our tweens that there's so much added pressure on them with school.
Yeah.
And with, trying to fit in, and it's coming earlier and earlier for
yes.
them. And that pressure is very overwhelming. They feel this need to be in multiple activities and there's no time, there's no rest for their brain. They don't know how to be bored. So those are just a couple of the things that I've seen with my own tweens. my daughter recently tried out for basketball. This was a year ago. And she was internalizing the pressure. And I thought I was doing the right thing by saying, there's no pressure. There's no pressure. But I was shutting her down.
Yeah.
I wasn't giving her that open moment. And then she looked at me and I could see, you know, that she was really just getting really upset. And I said, wait a minute. Tell me what pressure you feel. And she said, what if I don't make it? What if my friends do? What if I'm not good? So these what ifs were just bombarding her mind. So to really give space to that, to just let her talk about that anxiety. Once she got through it, she kind of breathed a sigh of relief and was like, okay, this is normal. Like it was normal. Those are absolutely normal things for her to feel. And I can go back to those moments being that tween, but not the pressure that they feel. Like the pressure that they feel right now is so much more because their lives are lived through social media. Their parents, We put their lives on social media. And so trying to learn that aspect, trying to learn the social aspect, just trying to be excelling, you know, that pressure of perfection that also comes in with anxiety. I mean, it's just coming at them sooner and sooner. And I can see how overwhelming that can be. It's overwhelming for me as an adult. So I can see how overwhelming that can be for our young children when their brains are still growing and developing and trying to learn how to process all of this information that's coming at them, you know, 90 to nothing.
Yeah. I went to a workshop one time and of all things, it was talking about teenage breakups. Mm. And I thought, oh, good night. This is going to be silliness. It's one of those moments where a lot of things clicked for me as far as how kids process. The speaker said, you know, when a teenager breaks up, they have no file folder of experience. So That loss, they have no concept of loss. So it literally does feel like the end of the world. And then they have no experience of processing that. And I think for our tweens, especially, they have no file folder for how to deal with mean girls or mean boys or this or that. And so they're building those file folders, but with a brain that's still developing. And you factor in the lack of sleep and nutrition and care at home, it's really a challenge.
It is, you know, and we forget, or I say we forget, I think I take for granted that these tweens are growing up with a mom and dad.
Yeah.
That are involved. And that's not the case for a lot of them. You know, some of them may be in foster homes. Some of them, their grandparents may be raising them or just a single parent, and they may not be involved in their life. And that's what they go home to every day. You know, and I was in an eighth grade group at a school. I was speaking to them. We were talking about coping skills for anxiety. We were talking about gratitude, how gratitude can help with anxiety. And one boy raised his hand and he said, I'm thankful for the family that I live with right now.
Mm.
And all of us, even the students just looked, I mean, you could see everybody was like, wow. And for him to say that out loud, I knew that had to be a pretty special family that he was living with. But we forget that their home life is nothing like what mm-hmm. we had, you know, even just 20 years ago. And so much has changed. So much has changed. And it was hard for us then. So just imagine how hard it is for them right now.
Yeah. I mean, especially like going through a pandemic and like the lockdown and all the changes. My son and I were going for a walk last night and he was just talking, he's in eighth grade, about to be in ninth grade, just like the difference of how middle school was completely affected by COVID. It happened in a sixth grade year. And then he called his seventh grade year a dumpster fire. So that was really funny. And then he's like, now all of a sudden it's like back to real time, but I haven't had all that prep time to get to all this hard work. And so now I feel like I'm working triply hard and I don't even know, now everything's back to normal, but I don't even know how to get to normal because I haven't had the buildup to that.
Right. It's like that. I mean, they've lived through trauma for two years now, right? Mm-hmm. I guess it all runs together. And that's what a powerful point for him to point out, you know, that he hasn't had those years to live and prepare him for this new season. And where I live, eighth graders have to plan out their entire high school.
Same. Year. And he's actually he's going into a collegiate program. So he has to not only plan out high school, but also college. It's right. Crippling for him. And he's not a tween, he's 14, but it's still so overwhelming to feel like you have to have it all figured out. It's just, it's like silliness to me. I'm like, there's no way you can figure that out.
I know. That's what I asked. I was like, what if you decide in 10th grade, that's not the path you want to go?
It's too late.
that's what they were like. Well, this is what you're stuck with. And I was like, well, that's hard to give no room there, you know, for change. So, you know, there's no room for change. There's no room for
mistakes even.
Mistakes. Yeah. You know, to make a pivot. And that I know I've said the word pressure a lot, but that's just the word that keeps coming to mind. That is a lot of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's some pressure that can lead to something good, but that pressure of like rigidity and perfection is breaking.
Yes. Yeah. And there's no grace. There's no room in there for grace. You know, you know, we as parents were in charge of our kids for the last few months of school back in 2020. And I don't know about you, but we were done after about 2 weeks. I was like,
that's not my gifting. We have a tutor that comes to our house, and I told her yesterday, I'm like, literally God sent you to this because I cannot do algebra.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we forget there, we need grace there because there were some things that they just didn't learn. They just did not learn. So I really wish, and maybe we're getting there, you know, giving them that grace, giving them that room to talk about what they're dealing with, talk about those things that they're going through.
Giving them permission to feel big feelings.
That's right.
The new movie, Turning Red, I think that's what it's called. Super controversial, whatever. I thought it was like so good from a therapist's point of view of big emotions and being able to feel your big emotions and how as parents, we feel those big emotions, but we can often tend to push those down. Yeah. And then subconsciously we try to then push, we want our kids to push down their big emotions.
That's right. I've seen, you know, a lot of parents have asked me those questions. They're like, how can I have conversations with them if I don't know all the answers? I'm like, well, you don't. And that gives them permission to not know all the answers and to just be honest in that moment and to acknowledge it. And they're like, oh, it's like a light bulb goes off to see that's okay, you know, and have the awkward conversations, because if we're not having them, the world is having them with them, and the world gets to build that foundation. So we need to be first. We need to be that voice that's having those conversations with them, laughing and giggling. It always ends up being in the car for us where we have the awkward conversations because nobody has to make eye contact. Like
exactly.
We're on the road and they're talking. And it just kind of leaves that space.
Yeah.
To be okay with the awkwardness, but awkward, that's normal to have that awkwardness, because I want my kids to come to me. I want them to talk to me, and I want to laugh and I want to giggle, and I want them to know if I don't know all the answers, it's okay. That is okay. The good news is we can turn to God, and he can guide us. He can direct us and help us find those voices like counselors, like doctors, like coaches who have been trained in these professions to help us really make these discoveries. And I think the more that becomes normal, the more we can see that growth in our kids for their mental health and for their life skills, how to respond, how to live, and just to, you know, live in a different way than what we did growing up.
I love that, because mental health is health.
Yes.
And there's still a stigma, but mental health is health. And the more we can wrap around our own minds to protect that, I think the more we're able to offer that language and mindset for our kids. So what are some warning signs that parents need to look out for in regards to depression and anxiety for their tweens?
Yeah. And this can be different. I mean, I know, you know, this, you know, for every one of them, when I was writing the book, I did a survey because I wanted to hear from them. What are some things that you feel when you feel anxious, you know, when you feel like your brain's kind of going in that fight or flight mode when you don't need it? What are some things you experience? And these were some warning signs that these tweens shared with me. It was things like having stomach aches. Their stomach would hurt all the time. They couldn't sleep at night. Because those thoughts were racing. Their heart would just beat 90 to nothing, and they didn't know what it was. They would go from breathing normal deep breath to feeling breathless, that shallow breathing. They also said that they felt constant worry just worrying about just general everyday things. Sweaty, they would feel sweaty palms, sweaty forehead. Many of them said that they would have thoughts in their head about what they were going through, but they couldn't get the words out. They couldn't form the words. They couldn't put a word to the emotion that they were feeling in their minds. And then others share just difficulty concentrating in school. If it was a test, if it was a tryout, if it was something going on with friends, they would feel like it was very difficult to concentrate, very difficult to focus because their mind might wander off. You know, we call it daydreaming, but their mind might be thinking about that situation instead of being in that present moment of what they were dealing with. Headaches, fidgeting, you know, popping their fingers, biting their fingernails. I still do that. I bite my fingernails. These are all some things that they're doing that excessively over, you know, an amount of time, that there may be some more things going on. You know, if your child, if your tween is saying to you going to school for a few days that their stomach hurts, well, there may be something going on with some friends. Maybe they have experienced a mean girl situation or a bullying situation, and that is just a way their body is physically responding to the stress and the anxiety they feel. You know, sometimes we think they're just trying to get out of something, but really there may be something more going on where we can just have a little bit deeper conversation. So I thought those symptoms were very interesting.
Yeah, very descriptive.
Yeah.
Very intuitive that they know that and recognize it. That's really shows a lot of emotional intelligence.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say to add on to that, as far as the depression goes, if your kids are isolating, not having interest in things, not eating, eating too much, like eating different patterns, different sleeping patterns, that's a time, like you're saying, to reach out to your pediatrician and get some outside help. I think as a parent, it's better to be overly cautious. Don't be like a helicopter parent, but to get those resources from a trusted professional and let them decide.
We have really tried to help our daughters know that your guidance counselor at school is there for everyone.
Yeah.
Like, go talk to her. Go talk to them if you are struggling, trying to make that normal as well. So they can see that they're not just hiding in their office, like they're there as a additional resource.
A resource.
Yeah. And just trying to really make that a normal thing.
I love that.
Yeah.
So you have the devotional, like what are some action steps that parents can implement to help their kids? And then what do we do if our kids like don't want to take the action steps?
Yeah, that is a hard one. that's a hard one. I would say for us as a parents, to some action steps that you can implement, that we can implement, is to listen. You know, to just be there, be available. Don't think you have to provide a solution. Just listen. Provide moments where conversations are happening. Even if it's about random things that maybe you don't care about, they care about it.
Yeah.
So let them talk. Let them talk as much as they want to, you know. So you want to be available. We want to provide those conversations for them. If your tween or teen has a phone, has social media, I would highly encourage you to make sure you have restrictions. They need restrictions on those phones. They need restrictions on those electronics. And if you are, you know, allowing them to go to bed at night with those phones plugged up in their room, take them out. Take them out, because what's happening is we think they're going to sleep, but they do just like we do. Oh, I got to check one more thing. Oh, I got to see if somebody liked that picture. And then it's an hour or two later, it's after midnight, and they're not sleeping. So we want to remove those devices from their rooms. Remember, you are the parent. God made you their parent first, not friend first. So be their parent. Remove those devices. I think you've probably seen that, Melissa. I mean, just with electronics, social media, that's really feeding a lot of anxiety. So taking that.
You have an 80% chance more likely to feel worse after going on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever, than not. So you feel 80% worse going on those after you engage with social media.
Yeah. So I think, you know, having those restrictions, taking those devices at night, you know, that can help, you know, for us as parents. I think too, you know, leading our kids, kind of helping them to see that they can build their faith, that they can look to God, that they can seek Him out. Just helping them to learn that now, training them up and helping them, you know, to see that it's normal to go to a counselor, to talk to your doctor when you are seeing that these things are happening. I think all those things can help us as parents. And also for parents, you need a community as well, because you're going to need those people to go to and say, goodness, this is hard. You know, me and my daughter are just having a difficult time right now, or me and my son are really struggling. So you need that community. You know, God doesn't want us to do life alone. We're to bear one another's burden. So I would say to you as parents, if you're listening, who's your community? Who's your tribe? Who can you go to? Who can you lean on when you need to be lifted up? I think that is so important. And then, goodness, the question about if they don't want to listen, if they don't want to take action, I think we can all find ourselves there in some moment.
Yeah, so true, so true.
That gives you relief to know, okay, it's not just my kid. It's not just my tweener teen. Yeah. To know that that does happen. Still provide that space, still have those conversations to say, hey, I love you. And I'm here for you, and I'm going to continue to provide this for you so that you know you can come to me when you're ready. For us, you know, my daughters have their ministry leaders at church, you know, so as a parent, to kind of release that control and say, if they're going to talk to them and I know they're safe,
awesome. Go for it. Yes.
Please do. You know, so also as parents, we need to see that that doesn't mean we are failing them as kids. That's right. We're actually empowering them to have the freedom to talk about what's going on. And if it means that it's not me and it's someone else, if it will help them get to the other side, okay, go for it. You know, that's what we want them to do. So don't think as a parent you're failing if they don't want to talk to you.
I love that. And I think too, as parents, to have that relationship equity, you know, maybe you watch like 10 jillion, you know, slime videos, hypothetically speaking. Yeah. And you spend an exorbitant amount on glue and et cetera, you know, theoretically speaking, is to say like, you know, I love hanging out with you. I really feel like you need something. So your book is designed to be a 30-day devotional, but let's just take it and let's just do one devotional a week.
Right.
Like what can your child do to kind of build those little steps? And even if, you know, their eyes are kind of glazing over, I think this is just, I'm saying this almost more to myself, is like just building in the habit. And like letting it be bad, I think is just helpful. I think as parents, and I'm right there, like a leader of the line, I want it to look a certain way. And I think sometimes I can have way too high of expectations. And so then my kids feel the weight of that.
Right.
And they don't want to feel shame. And therefore it kind of creates resistance with me and a power struggle. And I think when they're tweens, it's like kind of like their first step of like, okay, I'm thinking on my own. I want my own autonomy, which is good. But it's also, I think, just realizing that these relationships change. Right. And so I've had to like really listen to a lot of parenting books and really think about it and be open and kind of honest with myself that it's a struggle. It's hard, especially when we're dealing with the anxious kids and kids dealing with mental health issues.
That's good. And I appreciate you saying that, you know, just to know that I'm not alone, you know, in that battle. And I've had to learn to tell my kids, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When I get it wrong, or this expectation on them that was not realistic.
Yeah.
To say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And that has taken us a long way. You know, and even you talking about spending time with them through slime or doing these sensory activities, our girls recently, I don't know if this is a good parenting move or not, but we're all watching the Marvel movies in chronological order. And it's just been like this family, like we all get together, there's popcorn involved, you know, they were all kind of cuddled up on the couch, but that my girls love it. Like they just love that we're all there together. And even my youngest one, which now that school's almost out, I'm like, we're over it. So even if they get in bed a little bit later, it just kind of fills her cup because she loves to spend time. Like that's one of her love languages is quality time. So I think that helps too, knowing what their love languages are, knowing if it is words of affirmation, speaking life into them, spending time with them. Even if I don't want to do what they're doing, just to sit in that moment with them, it speaks to them to say, I'm loved. Mm-hmm. I matter.
If you're not willing to be in the surfacey stuff with them, they're never going to share with you the deep stuff.
That's so true.
They're not intentionally testing us as parents, but I think in a way they're like, they think to themselves, at least subconsciously, mom doesn't want to hear about my friend drama. She's not going to want to hear about my soul drama.
That's right.
And so it is hard. I mean, as a parent, I try and memorize all the kids' names, asking about their names. What's going on with so-and-so? What happened with this? What happened with that? Tell me about this. And I think the more curious we can be and compassionate, then it does eventually yield to those deeper conversations about faith, mental health, and all the things.
That's good. And that's one thing that I've learned, you know, from experts. When they get in the car, don't just say, did you have a good day today?
Yeah.
Questions like, who did you sit by in the lunchroom? What happened in PE? You know, and just kind of really get their wheels turning. And one thing that I'll ask my girls is, what did you love and what did you learn today?
Yeah.
And sometimes my teenager will just sit there and she'll be silent and then I'll be silent. And she's like, are you going to say anything else? I'm like, I'm waiting on your response. You know, in that silence, I want to feel it. Like I want to try to control it, but eventually she'll tell me something sarcastic that she learned. And I'm like, that's great. We learn something every day and we'll laugh and we'll move on. But just really asking those specific questions to try to stimulate conversation, you know, that really helps kind of bring those boundaries down or those, you know, they put that wall up so that could kind of chisel away at that wall. And sometimes I get out of the car and I'm exhausted because I'm really just trying to pull right against something. But even if it's just a sentence, it's something, you know, and it's just investing that time. So I think as parents, if we can be willing to be open, to be present, you know, and that, like you're saying, I love how you said that, the surface, so then they can express their soul. Because if it's not us, they're going to go to a stranger. They're going to go to someone else that may not be invested in loving.
They're going to go somewhere.
They are. So where do we want it to be? I want them to come to me, or I want them to go to those adults that I know who are also speaking into their life at our safe places. So yes, it takes time, but that's a good thing for us to learn as well. Put our phones down, put our electronics down and focus on that priority. Let them, you know, speak, let them grow and develop. And our 9-year-old, goodness, she is very mature for her age. And sometimes she will clap back at me about something she doesn't agree with. And I'm trying to learn to give her space to do that in a respectful way, but to say, it's okay if you don't agree with me. That's okay. And it's okay for you to voice that. That doesn't mean it's going to change the situation, but you can have permission to do that. So we're really trying to help her navigate that. Cause I look at her and I'm like, man, you are going to be an amazing leader one day, but we got
to, she's like an Enneagram 8. She has to learn how to
pull the stats, just pull the stats back just a little bit. So,
that's,
you know,
good.
I think as parents, we need to learn as well that just like they're growing and learning and developing, so are we. Like
process.
It never stops.
And I think it can ping pong back and forth as we're parenting. It forces us into a deeper level of growth.
Yeah.
And humility, love, you know, compassion, and those things can only come, in my opinion, through a relationship with God. There's a lot of things we can do on our own, but some like love, humility, grace, faith, that can only come from Him. Well, Karis, I feel like you and I could just like talk for hours and hours. Where can we find you and where can we get the book?
Absolutely. So you can find me at Karis Snider, CarisSnider.com. And that's also Facebook, Instagram. That's my name.
Karis, all the places.
All the places, YouTube. And then the books, I mean, they're on any online retailer, Anxiety Elephants for Tween Boys, Anxiety Elephants for Tween Girls. But if you go to my website, it'll give you links directly to the books. End Game Press is the publisher. So you could go to their website as well and grab the books. But I would love for you guys to connect with me through my website. I call it my email family. So I'd love for you to be a part of it and just send out. I don't bombard people with emails. I do just try to encourage and offer hope.
I love that. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me this week on Thrive, Mental Health, and the Art of Living Free. Be sure to visit my website where you can subscribe to get the show notes. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get your podcast. That way you never miss a show. And while you're at it, help me out by adding some stars to the rating and tell a friend about the show. Be sure to tune in next week where we have a really amazing episode with a missionary from the Ukraine, and he is talking to us all about what's going on in the Ukraine. He gives us basically like a history lesson and really expressing the beauty of the Ukrainian people, but also the needs that they have. So be sure to tune in next week, where we continue to help you to thrive in your life.